Hello and welcome back to a losing edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast. The Warriors lost the home game to the Knicks, so I sent out the bat signal to the man who loves to...
the king loser.
Yes, to pontificate after Warriors losses. No.
But we booked this ahead of time. It should have been a W.
We did book it ahead of time. So maybe you called this rookie referee and said, "Hey, I need something done here tonight. Eject Draymond Green." We can get to the reasons why the Warriors lost, but
fans like to talk about ref miscues. That's what I know about this business.
Yeah.
That they want to hear about the reasons, but they also they do like to lament just an obvious ref screw up. So we should spend some time on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, look, if people want to argue that the refereeing was poor with the fouling, I wouldn't agree, right? I think the Warriors did foul a bunch. Steve Kerr clearly thinks that. But I mean, when you eject, you know, the second best player on a team who has 8 assists in the first half and has been really at the core of the Warriors' season being stabilized. And you do that in the first half of a very close game. Yeah, that has a large impact on the game. And it was, you know, it's funny with Draymond Green. I've had conversations with him in the past about how he doesn't mind getting the first technical because it usually scares the referees enough into like knowing, oh, I can't give him a second technical. Because if I give, you know, and then he'll like, you'll see it where he'll get the first and then he'll kind of push the line more and keep arguing with him because it's like, man, they're going to have to write a report. They're going to be in the spotlight if they give him the second technical and eject him. So I have seen him not get ejected with one technical where he's really pushing the limit. Tonight, he was mad at James Wiseman for some, like, you know, I guess ill-timed post pass, and I guess he said, like, catch the effing ball or something
That's what's so funny to me is that there's just been such an over-the-top, and it's a cool storyline, so I get it. But the way it's done, obviously, by the local team on mentor Draymond taking James Wiseman's career in his hands, schooling him in the ways of basketball, and then it's just him yelling and cursing at him for not catching the ball, which obviously he wanted to catch the ball. And that was just kind of funny to me.
So much so that the ref goes, "Oh my gosh, is he yelling at me? You're gone."
I don't think that's what happened, by the way. I mean, in my theory.
What is your theory? I would love to hear.
I think he pissed that ref off. I think that ref was waiting for a pretext, and the ref screwed up because the pretext was false. I mean, if he had just waited a few minutes, he would have found a legit one, but I think he was working that guy's last nerve, and then he seized upon this event that had nothing to do with him, and maybe in the end, this is going to help Draymond out, because if he's all about this, I like risking it and being able to push on that second tech. Now it's a known thing that he was falsely ejected with the second technical. That's even more in the minds of the referees. So even if it doesn't help the Warriors in this particular game, it might help Draymond and the Warriors as a lobbyist in the future.
Yeah, but it hurts in the moment because every win against a team you should beat is important in a season where you are, you know, you're in a crowded Western Conference where really 3 results might swing you from the 5 seed to the 8, might swing you from the 7 seed to the 10.
Every game matters for this team. This is not last year, and it's not the 5 years before it. Every game matters for this team because you never know. I mean, this is a team where you don't know if Steph, God forbid, tweaks something and misses some time. That's going to ruin your playoff chase. So you need every win you can get, and they are a middling team, which means that you win some games unexpectedly, you lose some games unexpectedly, and you probably, I think they just have to hover around that 500 mark and then hopefully have enough cohesion to make a push to get some separation. But yeah, it's not nothing to lose this game.
Yeah, and I mean, we can now kind of get into the reasons. So, I mean, first of all, they had a really bad defensive quarter with Draymond. It's funny, I actually came into the night planning to write about Draymond Green's clear defensive importance. If you looked at the numbers coming in, they were like 103.4 rating in his 200-something minutes, 270, I think. And they were like 111 rating in his 400 minutes off. And it was like the difference between an elite defense and like a bottom 10 defense. But I mean, you saw it some in the second half, and like I think you're going to see it all season. But they Knicks scored 40 points in the first quarter with Draymond on the court for most of it.
Didn't he do a take foul in a situation where I don't usually see him do a take foul? Am I misremembering that in the early action? That might have been a signal that this was not going to be as locked in a game as certainly the one before it.
And that's part of what I wanted to write about a lot fuller and ended up did kind of slipping into the post game thing I wrote was like, he needs to be at his top defensive level for like 70 to 80% of the season. And there's games this year where like Denver, he was like really like negative defensively and they lost that. And tonight, you know, he had 8 assists. I thought he was actually having a pretty good first half, but defensively, clearly like he wasn't all the way there.
His best demonstration of value is what happened when he got ejected. I mean, it was like you take the Jenga piece out and the whole tower falls apart. It's just amazing how valuable somebody who doesn't score at all is to a team. It's really quite incredible. And not only that, to what you're saying, they need him to be engaged, not just present, but actually present and engaged. And that might be a big burden considering some of the bumps and bruises he's had over the years and considering what his body has been through. I think him and Steph both, it's something they need to be careful with. It's a lot of burden on those two guys. And there's some nice stuff happening with the bench doing a little better than maybe expected that can take some of the burden off. But I do wonder, and I think there's concern about that when you think about this team season.
Yeah. Let's get into the second half. So he gets tossed. I think it was 55-55 at one point right before the ejection. I believe at the moment he got ejected, it was 60-55. So despite the 40-point first quarter by the Knicks, the second unit was good to start the second quarter. Well, good is strong. Poole, you know, was bricking some threes, which, you know, I don't know why he's I do know why Kerr is playing him over Mulder. I'm just not sure I agree with it.
Yeah, pull over Mulder is, I think, a questionable one.
Yeah. And you know, we got other rotation questions in the second half, too. But, you know, anyway, so he leaves at 60-55. I think it was maybe 9.5. I don't know exactly.
Wait. Let me. I'm going to make my guess as to what the questionable one in your mind is, because you are a loony hater and I am a loony defender. Is it the Wiseman for Looney substitution? Is that the one?
No, it's not actually. But
is that one wasn't a good one? I think that one kind of turned things. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it will. Well, look, he starts Pascal in Green's place to open the second half, and it seems logical in the moment because look, Pascal kind of plays the same position as Draymond theoretically, but we saw Pascal in the starting lineup to open the season against the Nets and Bucks. It worked terribly. At this point, I think we can kind of say Eric Pascal's a center. He's not even a power forward anymore.
He's Montrezl Harrell. I mean, that's what he is in a different way.
He really only works on this team in lineups that don't include Looney, don't include Wiseman. At this point, like, he could play small ball where it's him and Draymond out there, but it's clear he's most productive when Draymond's not out there either, right? It's him and a bunch of wings that kind of spread the floor, wings and guards. So, you know, I don't necessarily love him next to Wiseman to open the second half. And then Nico Mannion, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That was questionable, but at least it was entertaining. I mean, at least I was like, okay, I'm very interested in this game.
Yes. I mean, he came in and I was like, okay, what are you going to do here? Oh, well, that was interesting. And Nico Mannion actually had 4 assists in 8 minutes. They were like a -7 in his 8 minutes.
I thought, I thought he played pretty well. I think he
missed Looney, 2 threes, but yeah.
Yeah. I think Looney coming in kind of messed with the Nico Mannion, what he was operating with. It was like, it felt like he was operating on all pro, and then they ramped it up to all Madden right there when it came to running an offense to take Wiseman out and to replace him with Looney, which I think Looney does a lot of great things, but love it. A lot of that is founded on this chemistry with Steph, and there's not a lot to work with if you are a very green point guard getting thrown into the action, and suddenly instead of this lob gravity threat of Wiseman, you have Looney. So I think that he's a rookie. There was the chances of him being good were not big when he was thrown into the action.
He did not lose them the game, that is for sure. I probably would have just started the second half with like Damian Lee instead of Pascal, kept the second unit, you know, smooth. And honestly, what I probably would have done is go Damian Lee instead of Pascal. And then when you take Wiseman out in the middle of the third, like you normally would, just bring Pascal in, skip Looney for the second half, and just try to go kind of fast up and down, either small ball center or Wiseman, yeah. Which honestly I might advocate on most nights. Like I kind of think,
well, especially, you know, this is where we disagree. Where they're trying to just break out of the Thibodeau vice grip, right? You know, you got to run past this half court defense of the Knicks, these scrappy Knicks. It would have made even more sense. So yeah, I would agree. I agree with all your lineup takes right now. I agree with them to the point where I'm not even defending the Looney insertion in that case. I think they should have. It felt like they were getting momentum at that point. They were finding something, and it was maybe gelling. And then it just seems like they're very regimented as to when Wiseman comes in and when Wiseman comes out. And it just seemed like that was the time that Wiseman comes out, and so it just had to be that.
Yeah, I think they should go a lot more night to night with him. And, yep. You know, opponent to opponent too, right? When you're playing the Spurs and Knicks, although, you know, he wasn't great with the Mitchell Robinson lob game over the top. He called it the cat and mouse post game that he's trying to learn.
That was more at the end, though, I think. Yeah, that was more that where things kind of fell apart. I do have some commentary on him, and it seems like he's doing a better job offensively. But defensively, it seems like he's really fading. And he was talking about after the game that he's trying to communicate. So I think it just might be sensory overload with him. But it seems like they've tried to get him to stop fouling. And they've told him, hey, you're big, just put your hands up. But he's almost interpreted that literally, where he's just putting his hands up. And he's
afraid to foul. He's just deathly afraid to foul.
And this is the NBA. The other, you know, the players coming at him, they can see that it's pretend defense, I think. Like, there's a difference. Like, there's a difference between the sort of fake, like, I'm going to close out or block your shot, like Draymond does. You know, sometimes he pulls the chair. It's like a different way of pulling the chair, where he runs up and then he doesn't do anything and the guy smokes the layup because he's surprised. And what Wiseman's doing, where it's just, hey, from my couch, it's just very obvious that he's not actually going to try to block the shot, and I think that was a problem for them tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about it some on the Warriors Plus Minus Fuller podcast, but it's like I think in the long term, all the lessons that they're cramming into his head will be good, but I mean, they've overloaded him with information. They've overloaded him with suggestions and takes, and I mean, it's Draymond Green roaring in his face. It's Theo Robertson and Chris DeMarco, who I think are doing a good job behind the scenes.
I didn't like when I said that the development team was on the clock, it seemed like a shot at those guys. I think those two are very competent and good at their job, so I do want to establish that. Shout out Chris DeMarco, Theo Robertson, and frankly Wiseman, as Zach Lowe was saying, if they redo the draft, is going one or two. I mean, he is playing beyond expectations according to Mike Schmitz, and I would agree with that. So I think there does need to be some patience. You see the roller coaster on Warriors Twitter of he's bad, he's great, he's bad, he's great. And I think overall, age 19, I think it's more good than bad. That's what I'm saying. Overall, way more good, way more potential than bad.
Yeah. And again, like, I actually think a lot of these lessons will benefit the 2021-22 Warriors, might even benefit the Warriors of a month from now. But I in the moment, you know, he's saying, well, Draymond Green's telling me never to be the first person to jump, always be the second person to jump. And I think that's some, you know, you could tell he's like almost crawling over there, like, okay, he's going to come at my hip now. Don't jump, don't jump. And then the guy shoots a layup, makes it, and then he's like, okay, now I jump. And it's like, you know, but that's a rookie center, right? It's just the life of a rookie center.
It's how perception works. Like, when we're overloaded, we don't notice certain things. And there are a bunch of experiments that they've performed like this, where they throw a bunch of distractions and you don't miss somebody in just a crazy costume walking across the stage because you're following everything else. I mean, this is known. And I do think that Wiseman's not the most intuitive player. There's a lot that he's still learning, but the great thing about him is, by all accounts, he's very willing to learn. And that's also a big deal. And you don't hear it about everybody. not even everybody on this team. And so I'm encouraged, you know, I'm encouraged. And the thing he has, and I think it's easy to discount because people say tools, and yeah, tools, but there's something else, which is literally nobody can get higher off a flat-footed jump in the NBA. I can't name somebody. I think I put that out there on Twitter. I can't really think of somebody who gets that high up there. And some
people, 9'6" standing reach with athleticism.
Yeah.
Whereas like Rudy Gobert, I think, has a slightly taller standing reach, but Rudy Gobert doesn't burst like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah.
That alley-oop in the game before, it was weird. It was like he got to the top. He got to the top of a ball he shouldn't have been able to get to, and then he went up just a little bit further. And that's just a weapon, man. That's a weapon. And when it's honed properly and when he gets better, it could be profound for them. So I'm more of a Wiseman optimist than a Wiseman pessimist. And a friend of ours who's a very savvy, very savvy basketball analyst, I think, disagrees, and we'll do a podcast on that in the future. But yeah, I'm more good than bad when it comes to how he's playing. At the same time, I do think the way he's playing defense had a role in this particular loss.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Let's get to the fouling, because Steve Kerr went absolutely ballistic on it post game. I would say, I mean, that was his, like, they've had 7 losses now. That was by far the most pissed he's been after a loss, which I didn't even think it was their worst loss. Like the Pacers one probably was like the one that they probably should have had and didn't. But he's clearly just getting really frustrated with their fouling. They are averaging now about 24 fouls per game, which is second most in the league. Only the Wizards commit more fouls, and like the Wizards are the worst defense in basketball and haven't played in like a week. And then opponent free throws, same. They're giving up 29 opponent free throws per game. And they were over their averages tonight against the Knicks. They had that sequence in the start of the fourth quarter where they fouled 4 times in 13 seconds and gotten the bonus before the 11-minute mark, which is like, you know, I'm sure that's not a record, but could be. It's repetitive, you know. There's a reason why they average as many as they do. And he blamed it. You know, look, they have a rookie center. That's going to be like a persistent issue. They have, you know, Oubre and Wiggins and Steph Curry, who's an overreacher, right? So like they're going to naturally, I'd say, probably be pretty high in fouls this year, but it's overdone right now. They need to cut, you know, 4 per game. They need to cut down opponent free throws by about 5, 6, 7 if they really want to be a top 10 defense. How bad is it? And like, was this just a one night thing to you that you noticed it, or like, have you been noticing it?
I guess it's weird to say them, right? They, because there are different players doing different things. It's not like they've all caught the fouling, you know, the fouling cold. I think we should be a little more granular about it. Is he mad at Bazemore? You know, is that what's happening? Is he mad at Steph? Did he not think that that Steph was fully competing? That's where my mind goes when I think about this, because I just don't think about them as just a fouling team. That's generally just coming from a few guys.
Well, guess what? I looked up the numbers because for the post game, they actually have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys in the top 78 in the league in fouls per 36 minutes right now.
And that was so before.
By the way, that was before tonight. These guys might have jumped higher.
So I stand corrected. Maybe they are just a fouling kind of team.
So I want you to guess. I know him. Obviously, I'm looking at the list right now. Who is number one on their team? And he is entering the night was 9th in the NBA in fouls per 36 minutes. 6 per 36.
That's Wiseman.
That is James Wiseman, who is second. He's 20th in the NBA. He's averaging 5 fouls per 36 minutes.
Oh man, this is now. I knew Wiseman was 6, but like now I'm like, God, is it? I mean,
friend of the Ethan program.
Oh, it's Looney,
Kevon Looney. So their centers are fouling like crazy.
Yeah,
and you know Looney, that's physical limitations. I mean, we know he's like a smart defender, but he's just sometimes he just has to foul or else, you know.
Yeah,
larger, you know, more athletic opponent will score if he doesn't foul. Okay, third is Draymond at 4.1. Fourth is a guy you've already mentioned. Do you want to guess, or do you want me to tell you?
A guy I've already mentioned. Does Pascal rack up the fouls? I'm trying to remember.
He's like not. He's 110th in the league, so he wasn't among the
He needs the foul more. Some guys need to foul more.
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually shocked Steph is not even close. Steph is like not fouling. He's 197th in the league. He's only fouling 2.3 times.
So Bazemore was the guy you're going to
Bazemore's fourth, yes.
Yeah.
Damian Lee is fifth, and Brad Wanamaker is sixth. So they just got a lot of rotation players right now who are just, they're hacking.
You know, though, I don't know. I mean, we need something a little, this is when it's really good to be around the team because I think Steve will be a little more specific with what's going on because some of those are sins of, what's the phrase I'm even looking for? That you want the effort. You want them going for it, trying to turn teams over. And some of those guys are in units that have been doing pretty well, right? It's not the starters where that's been the persistent problem. So, it does seem to be a broader problem than just a few guys. I stand corrected. It's a very strange issue. And I don't know whether to chalk it up to the roster or what I often keep saying this season, which is weird year. This is a very weird year. This is a season unlike any season.
Yeah, it is. And to be honest, like I know that's besides the Draymond ejection was the story of the night, right? This like persistent fouling issue that Kerr went ham on in postgame. But I don't know. I'm really not that concerned about that specific stat or flaw right now.
It's interesting. That's what's great about a middling team, and they're literally middling right now, is that something's always going right and something's always going wrong. You know, there's a lot to analyze when it comes to a team that's hovering around 500, and that's an interesting one. And of course, the worry is that if you chew them out for fouling, then you don't want too much passivity, and so it makes it a little interesting for the next game as to how they're going to approach it.
As they go to Utah and face a tough Jazz team, who I think are now maybe 11-4. They're shooting the three like crazy. Have you seen the Utah's 3-point percentage team wide? I think it's like 43% or something.
Donovan Mitchell was the fastest player to get to 500 threes, which is strange because I don't really think of him as a sniper. That was an odd one. I want to see that Gobert-Wiseman matchup. That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, for sure. He's had a lot of interesting center matchups coming up. Anything else about this team that you wanted to get into? You sounded like you might have wanted to soapbox a little Marcus Thompson.
So to set the stage for people who are not living life on Twitter, but who listen to the podcast, Marcus, our beloved colleague, last night at the moment of this recording, or we should say after the Spurs game, he was doing a story on Oubre's tip dunks. And so he was asking each player about the tip dunks. Because Marcus is so good at the banter and he's just so at ease in those situations. He was actually making the press conferences a lot more fun, in my opinion. I was enjoying seeing what some of the players' responses
were. He does every time. He always adds to the presses.
And I learned that Wiggins thinks that Oubre might, the way Wiggins was talking made me think that he thinks Oubre has more athleticism than him, which was a little bit interesting to me. But so at one point in the Steph press conference, Marcus begins his Steph question. He goes, "Wardell," and I didn't think anything of it because I've seen Marcus address Steph that way a bunch of times. I mean, there really aren't many relationships between a writer and athlete that are as lengthy in one area and as deep as Marcus and Steph. And so I see Steph look up, kind of a, huh? And that look that Steph had, in my opinion, at that moment was, oh, here's Marcus. He's going to, here comes the test. What's the test? I mean, that's how I read it. But then it goes on to Twitter. I think maybe Drew Schiller clips it. I don't know. And next thing I know, I'm looking at Twitter and it's the number two trending topic in America. What the hell?
That did shock me. You know what? It was the second time this week because I'd asked him after the Lakers game about the Wiseman struggles, and he had the AC Law comment, and AC yep. Law was trending the entire next day. Wow. So
I have a take about this, but before I get to the take about how that happens, it's just bizarre to see everybody layer this. I interrupted you though. It's your podcast. Wait.
No, you didn't interrupt me. I was just saying like it was the second time this week that relatively entertaining post game moment in a Steph Curry Zoom that, like you, when the AC Law one happened, I didn't think was like, you know, some crazy comment, it turns into like some trending Twitter topic. I thought that I just wanted to add that into it because it was the second time this week, but continue down the Wardell path.
Yeah, it was so bizarre because I see people reacting with this context they imagine happened, and it just doesn't have any bearing on it. And it's interesting to see it take shape because people want it to be what they want it to be, and so it becomes that. And it becomes that Steph was offended or put off that Marcus used his government name, which I can assure you has happened like hundreds of times. I mean, this is not unusual at all, but that's what people wanted it to be. And completely bizarre, all these people saying, you know, bad things about Marcus, not knowing anything about him at all.
The LA Times wrote some like odd blog post about it.
Yeah, about how you can tell that they had a relationship before, but it must be frosty now or some such, which, you know, if you had seen the answer to the question, it's clearly not true. Just not at all. And I mean, I think I can speak as an expert of when a player is mad at me in a press conference. I think I might be an authority to speak on this matter, that's just not the case. And so I look at it not mad or, you know, like, oh my God, Marcus's reputation has been tarred. It's more, this is just bizarre. This is so weird to have been on the Zoom call to see the actual thing play out and then to see it become the number two trending topic in America when it's this completely mundane, misunderstood interaction. And you know what the ultimate takeaway is, Anthony? You know what the ultimate takeaway is?
Welcome to the internet in 2021. Yeah, that would be my takeaway.
Steph's back. Steph's back, man. Steph is back. It's been a while.
Are you talking about from like a headline creation standpoint? Yeah.
Yeah.
The AC Law one, like I said, I mean, that thing blew up.
Yeah, the fascination is back. You know, Steph says that in passing middle of the season last season, I don't think anybody really cares, but it's Steph Curry is Steph Curry again. He can go out there and he can score potentially 60 points. And this thing is now, I mean, people are kind of, it could be really big for the NBA. You know, if the Warriors take off, we're looking at them right now. They're at this 500 mark. It's potentially
8-7.
Sorry, yeah, not five. It's great math by me. But they're at this kind of middling place, and if they get some separation, if they turn it on, I think it's potentially huge for the league, because Steph Curry is a superstar who commands an inordinate amount of interest from the general public. That's my take.
Yeah, and I mean, you still have Draymond Green, who has a, anytime he steps onto a press conference setting, he's going to, you know, have three viral quotes himself, you know, to varying degrees of viral, but he, you know, has some very noteworthy national quotes. Steve Kerr very much makes news and electrifies his fan base in other ways too. And then say what you want about Wiseman's growth path. He's an interesting rookie to add into this mix, with just, you know, the occasional unbelievable highlight. He himself, I think, is shown an emerging personality in the way he's handled the Draymond mentorship, and just his background, right? The Penny Hardaway aspect of it all. It's just, they can be interesting. Now, you have to be good to maintain
that's the interest. The thing.
They have to be good. And I don't mean like win the title, but like playoffs and like a threat in the playoffs.
Yeah. They've got to, if they get in the playoffs, you know, my fascination with ratings, that's a huge swing factor for the NBA. I mean, this is, in the interest it commands, I think it's even more so than the Lakers. No offense to your other team. And if they're good, it's just potentially huge. And if they fizzle out and they don't make the postseason, I do think that that really impacts the general public's capacity for tuning in to the NBA playoffs. So yeah, it's that's my main thing. That's my main thing. It's,
I would agree, and it would give them a nice little cushion going into next year too, right? Because if they're a playoff team and they're dangerous enough and Wiseman grows enough and Curry and Draymond still look, you know, late prime instead of past prime,
they get going into next season. They get the fourth overall pick from the Wolves.
Yeah. And then you have the Klay Thompson return into a Chase Center that has never seen this team, right? It's seen three Steph Curry games ever. I mean, with fans in Chase Center. And Klay Thompson's never even played there. By the way, environment next year.
Kevin Durant looking amazing. This doesn't mean that the injuries are the same, right? But it gives you a little bit of hope. You know, it makes you think, okay, maybe Klay will come back. He's a shooter with size. He's not KD. I look at how Kevin Durant is playing, and I think, okay, maybe what if Klay comes back, and you don't want to bet on it, but what if Klay comes back and he just hits the ground running? You know, it's possible. It's possible.
Well, this post-game Knicks loss podcast went a lot of directions. I wasn't sure it was going to go, but here we are. Ethan, thank you for joining.
Yeah, hopefully it was more interesting than watching the game with all those fouls.
Tom Thibodeau loved it. That was one of Tom Thibodeau's favorite regular season games since like the Bulls days.
Gracious Tom Thibodeau, by the way. I was on that Zoom call afterwards, and he's just lavishes his opponents with praise. It's the gentleman, Tom Thibodeau.
Anyway. All right. Ethan, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.